cricket, lovely cricket. Cricket lick the ball before it reach the wicket.
Greetings, cricket fans. Welcome along to 98 Out. Phoenix FM's weekly cricket magazine show. An hour packed with news, interviews, chat, some music. What more could you want? You are listening to Phoenix 98 on the FM dial if you're in the Essex area. Or if you want to listen via the internet, phoenixfm.com, click on Listen Live. And you can also shout at your smart speaker. Play Phoenix FM is the command.
Lick all the ball and the bowl of them stall. Him lick all the ball and the bowl of them stall. Him pins them.
And on tonight's show, quite a lot to talk about. India are hosting England. That gets underway next week. And after a lot of wrangling, they've finally sorted out the TV rights. So we'll be updating on that. There's some test match action going on down in Australia where the West Indies are visiting. There was also some quite extraordinary scenes at the India versus Afghanistan T20. I'll be telling you all about that. Few comings and goings at the counties. And my special guest tonight is Lizzie Ammon, cricket correspondent from The Times. And I'll be talking to her about why there's just such an air of depression and misery amongst the cricketing world.
The players them say them not broke no fight. The players them in a full suit of white.
And music tonight, if I can squeeze it all in, which I didn't last week. But New Order, Chemical Brothers, and Status Quo. You never hear them on the radio anymore, do you? So sit back, enjoy, make yourself a cup of tea, have a can of beer if that's your thing. But don't do any of that if you're in the car. And of course, remember, you can download this show to listen back at your leisure. Go to phoenixfm.com, look under programs, look for 98 Not Out, and you can download the show there. So lots to get through tonight, so we'll crack on as always. It's cricket birthdays of the week. And the usual smorgasbord of cricketing people having their birthday. We'll start off with Darren Ganga, former West Indies player, now turned commentator. He's 45. Johnson Charles, also from the West Indies, 35. Beth Mooney, 30. Friend of the show, Martin Bicknell, 55. Essex legend, Brian Hardy, 74. Ace Supremo, Chevy Green, 36. Former England bowler, Ryan Sidebottom, 46. Megan Shutt, 31. Jeevan Mendis, 41. Wayne Daniels, 68. Keith Pont, 71. Haseeb Hameed, 27. Mark Stickety, 30. Akshar Patel, 30. And Essex County Cricket Club hits the grand old age of 148 this week. Happy birthday to everyone on that list. And remember, if you want to be included, email the show, radio@phoenixfm.com, title your mail 98 Not Out Birthdays, and just tell me whose birthday it is. And evidence that that works, although I didn't get the age, but Nicola Davis from South London is celebrating a birthday this week. And her friend, well, she's asked not to be named, but anyway, she emailed in. So happy birthday, Nicola. And remember, if anyone out there wants to have their birthday read out and cricket birthdays of the week, just get in touch via email.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
There's a lot of crackle and interference coming through my headphones and the speakers in the studio. So if you are hearing that as well, apologies. I can only think that it's the atmospheric conditions, because it is very clear. The sky is a very clear starry night out there. So maybe that's something to do with it. So apologies if your listening pleasure is being disrupted by some snap, crackle and pop. Right, let's get into it. Now, England are setting off next week. Well, they're out in training in Abu Dhabi at the moment, but the five-test tour of India has finally been agreed to be shown on TNT Sports, formerly BT Sports, after they swooped in to agree a deal to pick up the rights just 9 days before the series begins. There had been speculation that the rights for the series could go unsold, but as is often the case with packages for tours to the subcontinent, a deal has been struck at the 11th hour. Channel 4 showed England's 2021 tour of India after picking it up in a similar fashion. You might remember that. It was Rishi Prasad was the presenter and Alistair Cook was amongst the studio pundits. And it was actually quite good. TNT has broadcast plenty of overseas cricket in recent years, though, including the last two Ashes tour and England's trip to the West Indies in December. Now, they look like they are going to assemble a studio team and take commentary from the World Feed, which is expected to feature former England captains Owen Morgan and Kevin Peterson for the first two tests. The rights were sold by India some months ago to Pitch International, the London-based agency that has a foothold in cricket through its work with the England and Wales Cricket Board. Ollie Slipper, the chairman at Surrey, is chief executive chairman of Pitch. Broadcasters initially appeared to balk at the price requested for the rights, but differences in valuations inevitably closed as the deadline neared. Now, Pitch bought the rights for a long-term deal for all Indian cricket, but it's unclear whether it has agreed to sell the rights for this series or for a longer-term package to TNT. England's men travel again to India, this time next year, for a white ball tour. Insiders have long considered TNT as the favourites to pick up the rights, but the broadcaster looked to distance itself from a deal. Now, however, it has stepped up and picked up the rights. Sky, on the other hand, broadcast all of England's home international cricket as part of a huge deal with the ECB, but it has increasingly looked to move away from showing tours in favour of low-cost, high-volume franchise cricket, such as the Big Bash League in Australia and the SA20 in South Africa, which is both of which are currently showing on Sky's channels. So, yes, it's not like the old days where it was either the BBC or, you know, that had the rights on TV or radio or whatever else. Yeah, it's getting a bit more competitive. I'll talk to Lizzie Ammon about this a bit later on, but, you know, there's a lot of discontent from people that have forked up to get Sky, and now all of a sudden are realising that you don't necessarily get what you want when you pay for Sky. I mean, you get all the domestic stuff, but yeah, if you flick through the Sky channels at the moment, you can watch the Big Bash, you can watch the SA20, which is great if you like that kind of thing, but if you want to watch England in India next week playing red ball cricket, then unfortunately you've got to pay out even more for TNT, and it's not cheap. Although someone did say to me, you can buy monthly passes, which ease the pain, but you've still got to be digging deep. And in these days of hardship and watching the pennies, particularly after Christmas, then yeah, you do need to make a big decision on that.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Right, let's have a little bit of music. This week, it was the most depressing day of the year. It was officially termed Blue Monday because the nights are still dark, it's cold, we're all fed up after Christmas, etc., etc. So I thought there's only one thing that I can really play. It's New Order and Blue Monday. We'll be right back.
Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
It is officially the most miserable time of the year. Monday was officially tagged Blue Monday because the weather's awful, it's freezing cold, it's pitch black all the time, the sun really doesn't bother to come much above the horizon. It's post-Christmas, everyone's miserable, particularly miserable people are doing Dry January. Why would people do that? But in cricketing terms, it seems to be a particular fog of misery descended amongst followers. Now, I've got Lizzie Ammon from The Times joining me to discuss this general air of doom and despondency. Lizzie, are you picking up on it?
I am, yeah. I mean, I don't be too bleak. I do think there is a certain element of the fact that it is this time of the year and England haven't played any test cricket over the Christmas period. You know, they had a break and they had a disastrous World Cup. And, you know, so it might pick up if they do well in India. And that's a big old if. That is, if is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. But there does seem to be a real concern amongst diehard cricket fans that things are heading down a route that means that the thing that we love is going to be lost. Because of private investment, because South Africa have sent a B team, maybe C team, with 6-7 uncapped players to a test series in New Zealand to prioritise their franchise tournament. The return of Colin Graves at Yorkshire hasn't gone down university well across the spectrum, and does feel a bit like a retrograde step. You know, we're back to where we were, and the noises that Hampshire is being sold to an IPL team, or at least a firm that have stakes in the Delhi Capitals. I don't actually share the pessimism on that. I don't know that private investment's that much of a disaster, or at least it's a necessary evil, given where we are in terms of the finances in the English game and indeed across the world. But it does feel like we're on a kind of one-way train, heading down the tracks, only in one direction, towards a complete diet of T20 cricket that is going to be the king of everything, and we might end up, you know, not imminently, but it's a risk that Test cricket becomes an exhibit, you know, Wimbledon becomes an exhibition match once a year or something. And that's got to be a real concern for everyone who loves the kind of, the fact that cricket is a broad church. I mean, I have no problem with T20. I like all the formats, but you don't want one over, you want a nice balance, like you do with your diet so that you don't die of heart attack. You know, and it does feel like cricket fans who want that balance are not really being listened to and don't have a voice and are getting incredibly frustrated with, I guess, what's a feeling of helplessness about being able to stop this juggernaut.
Yeah, sort of dealing with one sort of point at a time. I've talked about this recently, that I don't feel that Test cricket, which is a pinnacle, there's nothing to me that beats watching day one of a Test match, wherever it is, 22 men striding out in white or whatever, and playing with a red ball, and the gravitas that that occasion brings. That's completely missing from T20 or white ball cricket. I find that it watching that, and I was watching some of the SA20 this week, it feels like a test. It feels like a knockabout, and the commentary is all a bit joking, a bit. But I get that it's a completely different format. But Test cricket, particularly, we've just seen this week a very weak West Indies side go to Australia of all places and much get destroyed straight away.
I think that was a lovely story of the debutant taking the wickets of Smith and Labuschagne. You know, having been a security guard 18 months ago and deciding to give up that job and try and be a cricketer. So it's still throwing up the nice stories, but we are seeing some seriously imbalanced contests, aren't we?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it doesn't do any favours. I mean, with you know, South Africa and India last week or the week before, you know, over in a day and a bit, this Australia West Indies test is going to last a shade over 2 days. And also, where England are concerned, there's been this almighty wrangle about who's going to show the coverage of this series out in India. We've all agreed that the worst thing that happened to cricket and Test cricket was the fact that it went on behind a paywall back in 2005.
In terms of reach, yes. I mean, that Sky money has paid for a lot of things that we wouldn't have had otherwise, like women's cricket and women's contracts and disability cricket, and, you know. It's a real balance, isn't it? There are commercial decisions. But, yeah, in terms of reach to the general population, yeah. I mean, yeah. They're just, the eyes aren't on the sport, are they?
Yeah, and, you know, I've always felt that there should have been some kind of compromise where something should have been available on free-to-air television. But, yeah, you're right. The, you know, what Sky has brought, and the revamp of coverage. I mean, if you look back now at coverage, and even when Channel 4 took it over in the late 90s, was it, or early 2000s, they sort of stepped it up from the old. I mean, if you watch some of the old BBC.
I mean, the BBC used to naff off to the racing in the middle of, you know, just as someone's about to get their, you know, you'd go off to Newmarket. All right, then, well, I won't watch them get their tongue then.
Yeah. I'm just fearful, and you sort of hear noises from various. The West Indies have been making a lot of noise recently about not having enough money to basically pursue Test cricket. And I've been talking about, would they possibly become the first nation to renounce Test status and just play T20?
Well, I mean, things are bleak there in terms of money, and that is because they get so little of the ICC's revenue. Fundamental to all of this, I think, Darren, is that the ICC, who are the international governing body, are they're not a governing body. They're basically a bank and an events management company. They don't intervene. They don't stand up to India. That it's not a democratic organisation. You know, the global money is carved up. Well, India gets substantially more than anyone else, and then Australia and England get the next lot, and then everyone else is just left kind of fighting for the scraps. And the ICC just do, you know, they kind of hand the money out. They run the World Cups and they hand the money out. They don't seem to do much else, really. And so without... in the absence of any sort of leadership, global leadership, it's every man for himself, really, every man and woman for himself. And that's a real problem because it means we can't get a guaranteed fee for test players across the piece. And like it or not, it's a short career for players. And if they can earn 4, 5, 6, 7 times as much for a lot less work, that's what they're going to do. And the only way to stave that off, there are two things I think, is to have designated windows in the annual calendar that are for international cricket only. There's no franchise in that window. So the IPL gets a window of 2 months purely for the IPL when nothing else is happening. I mean, if it's possible for the IPL, it must be possible for everything else. You just carve the year into sections. So if you want to run a franchise competition, you have to run it in one of these windows. And then the rest of it is international cricket, which means the players are not having to choose.
Yeah. And
but you also have to do the pay is fundamental.
Yeah. And that's, I like that reasoning, because I think you should also apply that to the domestic season. And I think you should have designated slots for, I think the county championship should run the whole season. And then mm-hmm. you should have slots where you have the T20 in a month block or whatever else. If we're going to have the 100, you have that in a specified month block. But you have them very much easily identifiable. And I sort of think that, tell me if I'm wrong, but do they cannibalise each other? Will the audience that love and attend red ball cricket be fussed about missing out on T20? Or the only thing that probably is the danger to that is that counties insist, or someone in a big office in NWA decides that you must play the 100, you must play blast cricket, you can't play red ball. Unless players just decide whatever way they want to go.
Well, I mean, the people who get the least listened to really are the players. You know, they get asked what they want and what's best for their performance and what's best to get the best out of them. And it's certainly not playing a T20 in Durham on a Thursday night and having to start, another one on Friday night up the other end of the country. You know, travelling and driving, that's not going to get the best out of anyone. But I think that in terms of the domestic, there's all sorts of things that are pulling at that. In terms of the blast, they get their best revenues on a Friday night. So a lot of counties want not a window. They want to play championship on 4 days and then have a blast match on a Friday. Now, there's nothing wrong with that because everybody would know where they stood. You play Sunday to Wednesday in a championship match, you play a blast on a Friday night. You know, and if they could manage that, that would be great. But there's all sorts of other things that are messing that up. The scheduling is a nightmare, and the scheduling internationally is a nightmare. But if we can start with identifying how in the international schedule, or at least the ICC being responsible for the programme at the moment, they just set the World Cups and then tell everyone else to fight it out amongst themselves and see what they want. You know, I don't think we should ever have 2 test series. There should always be a 3 test series at minimum. The World Test Championship, it's exciting if you get to the final. The rest of the time, it's not really, it's a little bit of an irrelevance, really. I'm not sure anyone takes that much notice of whether you're going to get World Test Championship points or not. The final's obviously, you know, an achievement. You get that great big mace. But there's a lot of problems. There's always been a lot of problems in cricket. You know, we've been having these discussions about schedules for eons, but we do seem to be at a real crunch point now. And the English game, I think, will have to go down private investment route. It'll have to. There just isn't enough money. The sums do not add up. And the international game has got to work much harder to protect Test cricket and sell it better and get people excited in. You know, I think there's a sort of myth that people don't enjoy Test cricket because there aren't bums on seats in a lot of places. Now, we have to understand that in a lot of countries, the economic environment means that people have to go to, you know, they just can't take time off to go to a state to cricket. That doesn't mean that there's not interest. It's what we say about the county championship, isn't it? Is that just because people aren't in the stands, in the ground, they're at work watching it on a street. You know, they don't take time off work to come watch 4 days of county cricket, but they are watching on the streams. They're forever refreshing cricket info. They're listening to the BBC commentaries. You know, just because they're not physically in the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
But equally, we've got to be nicer to spectators. I mean, the World Cup, honestly, it was so awful for the paying public. You know, late announcement of schedule, can't buy tickets, being treated really badly in the ground, not being allowed to walk, you know, all of these things. It just makes it a horrible experience for them. So, yeah, I think going back to what your original question, we're at a real kind of crunch point in cricket where a lot is going to change very, very quickly. I mean, we've already seen it over the last, it's even for the last 4 or 5 years, isn't it, basically, in terms of the rise of franchise tournaments. I mean, it's just gone bonkers with all of the new tournaments. And this year, I think, will be, the pace of change is going to be huge. And into next year, you know, it's and I can see why people are just going, oh, everything coming out of cricket is just bad news at the moment.
Yeah. Do you think also another reason for people's fed-upness is disappointment in the two Richards? When they were first sort of put in charge at the ECB, there was kind of hope that they were going to fight for the counties, try and rationalise the 100, et cetera, et cetera. But there seems to be a feeling that they haven't done that, and if anything, have done a bit of an about-face. Do you think that's fair?
I think so. I think they are still trying to navigate a way through what's a very tricky landscape. What they have done that I think is admirable is that they've opened up the discussion about the future of the 100 and the future of Kentucky to the counties. You know, they're not making the decision themselves. There will be a vote. They're having ongoing consultation. The trouble is that we've got 18 different business models and they all want different things, you know, and the bigger counties are doing well financially, you know, the Lancashires, the Surreys, they're doing well financially, and the others are really, you know, they're treading water and it's a bit grim. There's a lot for them to get their teeth into. I haven't given up on them yet. I think they are discovering that it is a lot harder to be head of the ECB than it is to be head of Surrey, because you've got all these competing things. You know, they've been hit with the ICC report, which was, you know, it was bleak reading about cricket being institutionally racist, sexist and class-based discrimination. That's fairly, you know, hefty stuff. But yes, keeping an eye on that situation. I do think we'll have some decisions about the future of the 100 but around Easter. I think at the moment we probably won't see huge change, perhaps an expansion by a couple of teams for 2025, but the difference will be that the teams won't be owned centrally by the ECB. I think the stake in them will be given back to the counties. Now, that has to be a good thing. I also think it's really odd when the governing body own the team. You know, that doesn't seem right to me. But I think we're still watching this space about where things are going to go.
All right, last question before I let you go. How long do you think we will survive with 18 first-class counties?
A decade at most, I think. I don't think we'll lose county cricket. I don't know whether they're... I think we will end up losing a few, maybe. I don't think we'll lose county cricket completely. I do. They may end up not being called counties, you know, I mean, I do think they'll still play cricket at home under the guise of Sussex. You know, that. I think there is a general recognition that you have to have a strong first-class structure. If there is Test cricket, and whatever there is Test cricket, and interestingly, the women want to play more Test cricket, and Australia have been talking about loose plans about bringing in a women's Red Bull first-class competition, not today. That's got to be encouraging. But I don't know that 18 is sustainable for loads longer.
All right, Lizzie, I'll let you crack on. Always love catching up with you. And
fabulous.
Very, very busy. Appreciate you giving me your time. And look forward to speaking again soon.
Yeah, speak soon. Thanks ever so much.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
I'm John Sharma, inviting you to join me here on Phoenix FM on Saturday afternoons for Phoenix Sport. The top local, national and international sports stories, plus live scores, results, reports, interviews, quiz questions and my sporting anniversaries. And lots of great music too. That's Phoenix Sport, every Saturday from 3 till 6 p.m. here on Phoenix 98 FM.
Tune into the Sunday Sessions on Phoenix FM every Sunday morning 10 till 12 with me, Kevlar. I'll be bringing you tracks from local artists. Most of those tracks are recorded down at our open mic, which takes place every Monday at 8 p.m. at the Essex Arms in Brentwood, right next door to Brentwood Station. Come along and just watch, or if you're a singer or songwriter, come along and sing us a song.
Sing, sing, sing.
It's me, Michelle Ward. A prawn cocktail.
I love a prawn cocktail.
I'm always rambling. What is the mayor's chain called?
Chain.
In fact, I never stopped talking. And I rubbed basically all of the skin off the inside of my thigh. You can answer my question of the day.
Michelle.
I think men go through the menopause from about the ages of 18 to 65. And after that, they die. Fantastic guests and super music. What am I lacking in the diet? Humour, really?
Yes.
Weekdays 10 till 1.
You're listening to 98 Not Out on Phoenix FM, the weekly cricket show with me, Darren Moutar. I'm here till 7 o'clock, and then after me, at the top of the hour, is the mighty John Chubb with the non-league hour. At 8 o'clock, he's replaced by Gareth Williams, bumper to bumper. And then Madeline Christie is here at 10 with The Night Shift, which is a really good show with loosely based around country music, but country music old and new and stuff you'd never, ever heard before. So make sure you catch up with that. Now, my thanks to Lizzie Ammon for joining me. Really interesting chat, as always, with her. Make sure you follow her column in the Times newspaper. And just while I was just playing the adverts, I had a quick flick through my Twitter and phone feed, and I noticed Michael Vaughan is at it again. He's in Wisden Cricket Monthly, saying that there should be fewer county teams or first class teams in the UK. It should be less cricket paid, and basically slimlining the whole thing. Read the whole piece in Wisden Cricket Monthly. It's on Twitter as well. And we'll subscribe to the magazine, and you will get all the details there. But Michael Vaughan, he loves it. He can't stay away from a controversy. Now, just looking around the world of cricket, now there's the SA20 is going on at the moment, and there's a game going on currently where there's a bit of England involvement. Will Jacks has hit 101 from just 42 balls for the Pretoria Capitals against Durban Supergiants in South Africa's T20 competition. He hit 9 sixes and 8 fours as he helped his side reach 204 for 9 off their 20. Jacks opened the batting for the Capitals with England's wicketkeeper batter Phil Salt, who scored 23. And keeping up the England connection, Salt was dismissed by England pace bowler Rhys Topley, who took 3 for 34 for the Supergiants. So well done to all of those, and especially to our good old mate Rhys, who continues to perform well since his comeback, his stunning comeback from a succession of injuries. So well done to him. Now, I was told off for not playing this last week, so I will squeeze it in right now. This is Status Quo and Caroline.
98 FM. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
You just don't get enough status quo on the radio anymore, do you? Good chance for you to get up and do a bit of headbanging and all the rest of it. There you go. I don't disappoint on this show. Now, unless you've been living under a rock for the last couple of weeks, you will know that this programme, 98, has been shortlisted for the final at the Sports Podcast of the Year Awards. We are shortlisted for the category Best Cricket Podcast, up against all the big guns. I've kind of got a bit of imposter syndrome, really, because what am I doing trying to lock horns with people from the BBC and Wisden and all the rest of it? But nonetheless, there we are. And I would really, really, I mean, I don't think I've got any chance of winning it, but you never know. But I would really like to give those big boys a bit of a bloody nose, and I need your help. So get to the phoenixfm.com website, or look on the the 98 Not Out Twitter page. The links, if you just scroll through, you'll find the links there to vote. And let's see if we can't cause a little bit of an upset.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Now back to the cricket, and a bit like saying it's 5 o'clock somewhere, it's always test o'clock somewhere as well. There is a test match going on down under. Australia are hosting the West Indies. Was always billed as a complete mismatch, this one, and also it's kind of unfolding that way as expected. Australia couldn't quite complete a two-day victory in Adelaide, but they are unlikely to be detained long in wrapping up a win. Josh Hazlewood dismantled West Indies top order, and in ruthless style, actually. He took 4 for 18 after Travis Head's hometown century secured a handy lead on a tricky surface against a spirited visiting attack. And from what was a much even contest midway through the day, with Australia 6 down and still 20 behind, they managed to pull away as the pre-series prediction had suggested they would. Although with the bat, they were made to earn their position of strength. The game hurtled along, particularly when Travis Head switched on the afterburners. But though West Indies could not begin their second innings until into the last session, with Shamar Joseph completing a memorable debut by claiming a 5-wicket haul, there was the looming fear about what could happen against the new ball. And so it came to pass, as Hazlewood, who had taken out the top four while conceding just 2 runs, and in fact he had 3 wickets before even being he had 3 wickets even before any scoring had taken place. He struck with his first ball of the second innings when Taj Chanderpaul's technical challenges were exposed with an edge to Alex Carey. Soon after, captain Craig Brathwaite, who could consider himself a little bit unfortunate when a firm clip off the pads was snapped up by Head at short leg on a day where he really could do no wrong. Alec Athanasi gloved a loose hook and burned a review in the process. The ball after, Australia had wasted the DRS for caught behind a pill. Cameron Hodge, one of the West Indies' 3 debutants, edged a drive to second slip as the innings sank to 19 for 4. At the close, West Indies trail Australia by 22 runs with 4 wickets remaining.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Listen to Phoenix FM. This is 19 Not Out with me, Darren Mutu. Talking cricket till 7 o'clock. Now, also, there was another astonishing event that happened in the T20 between India and Afghanistan. India won after a second super over. Now, I think we know what the barest of margins is, but I think it's kind of been redefined in this case. Rohit Sharma became the first man to hit 5 T20I hundreds as he took India from 22 for 4 to 212 for 4 through their highest partnership in international T20s with Rinku Singh. It was not enough. He came out again to hit 2 sixes in the first super over and then seemingly retired himself to get a better runner at the non-striker's end. Still not enough. He had to and was allowed to come back again and hit a 6 in the second super over too. This time, the valiant Afghans ran out of gas, hitting 2 short of a length, leg breaks straight to long off to end a dramatic night, and they're still without an international win against India, despite their high score when chasing, and despite stunning batting from Naib and Mohammad Nabi. That's all despite a great start with the ball in regulation time. So unlucky, guys, but that sounds like an absolutely fantastic game. And I did see a clip of the commentary box when the second super over was called. It was chaotic scenes. Now, the Under-19 World Cup gets underway in South Africa tomorrow, with the USA taking on Ireland and South Africa face off against the West Indies. Now, the final is slated for February the 11th. This tournament was supposed to be hosted by Sri Lanka, but they were suspended by the ICC in November because of government interference in the board's administration. So this led to the biennial, Under-19 World Cup being moved to South Africa. Now, the format is 16 teams across four groups, with the top three in each group advancing to the Super Sixes stage, where 12 teams will be split into two leagues. The top two from each group then advance to the semi-finals. India won the tournament in 2022, beating England in the final. And there is interest from Essex here. They have Charlie Allison, Luke Benkenstein and Noah Thain in the England squad, and Mackenzie Jones will be representing Scotland. So good luck, boys, and do yourselves proud.
98. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Now, whizzing around the counties, I mentioned at the top of the show that Essex is celebrating their 148th birthday this week, and they announced or confirmed it. There was a wide rumour going around, but it was confirmed on Friday that they have signed the former South Africa captain and opening bat, Dean Elgar, on a three-year contract. The 36-year-old will help fill the gap left by Sir Alistair Cook, who, of course, we all know, announced his retirement last October. Elgar has scored 5,347 runs in 86 tests and ended his international career after the recent series against India. He told the Essex website, "The club has been pushing for honours in recent years and I'm eager to contribute to further success. I've thoroughly enjoyed my previous experiences in county cricket." Remember, he's played for Surrey and Somerset before. "I'm really looking forward to joining up with the squad ahead of the season." So good luck to him. Now, he's the second signing for Essex ahead of the new season, after the arrival of wicketkeeper Jordan Cox from Kent. So Essex shaping up really nicely for the 2024 season. Anthony McGrath said, "Dean brings a wealth of talent and experience that will undoubtedly strengthen our squad for the 2024 season. His achievements in the international arena speak volumes about his capabilities, and we are excited to witness his impact at Essex." Now, elsewhere, Middlesex have said they are highly unlikely to sign an overseas player for the 2024 season in a bid to alleviate the financial troubles which saw them placed under special measures by the ECB last year. They've made two high-profile additions to their squad for 2024, with Lewis Deploy and Henry Brooks joining from Derbyshire and Warwickshire, respectively, on long-term contracts. And Director of Cricket Alan Coleman said that making any further additions would be unsustainable given the club's financial constraints. "I think we are pretty much done, if I'm honest," Coleman said. "I don't see us making too many more moves in the market, given the salary cap that we're under and the fact that things like flights and accommodation for overseas players are included in that. The most financial sense is to build a really strong domestic core of players where we get most value for money." So as we were talking about with Lizzie earlier on in the show, counties are under huge pressure financially. Well, that's it. Many thanks for listening. John Chubb is following me at the top of the hour with the Non-League Hour. I will play you out tonight with the Chemical Brothers, and this is Setting Sun. We'll be right back.
You're the devil.